This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, with you, as promised, 2 weeks in a row, and we hope to have an episode for you each and every week until we really get rolling in August and have all of the previews. But we'll have plenty of previews. We'll have plenty of best bets for you as the summer months go on. But it feels good to be back here talking college football with all of you. Just a reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe. Keep letting folks know about the podcast. It was great to see the responses from all of you in our first return episode, me and Adam Burke taking a look at the quarterback rankings that we had of returners in 2025. Looking forward to today. I had a chance to catch up with Ari Wasserman, who has covered college football for a long time. He's now at On3. He's got a great podcast. It's called Andy and Ari. He and Andy Staples multiple times a week. And we chatted for about 30 plus minutes on a lot of different topics, ranging from, you know, the season opener between Miami and Notre Dame, the high expectations of Clemson, Arch Manning this upcoming year. So looking forward to chatting with Ari Wasserman. We'll wrap up the podcast with a couple news and notes. Fun thing happened at Virginia Tech earlier this week, and it got me thinking about the success that the Hokies have had at home with that electric atmosphere, and the atmosphere was through the roof earlier this week. And some of you may have seen it, but if you didn't see it, we'll talk more about that. Also, exciting news regarding betting on college football here in Las Vegas, which we'll tell you a little bit about to close things up. But let's get to the Ari Wasserman interview, and real quick, little housekeeping here. We had a little technical snafu, so I actually had sent Ari my list of 12 returning quarterbacks, and we discussed it. He did not completely call me an idiot, but said he would have had John Mateer on the list. He's a little higher than Arch Manning than most. I know that he had a discussion on his podcast earlier this week regarding the success of Arch Manning and how high he is on Arch Manning. But I want to lead into the first question that was not cut off with Ari Wasserman regarding the quarterback play in 2025. And we discussed it a little bit last week, but I just feel like the quarterback level and the quarterback play this upcoming year has the potential to be absolutely phenomenal. And there is no sexy name like Shedeur Sanders. There is no huge transfer like Cam Ward going to Miami or Dylan Gabriel going to Oregon, Will Howard going to Ohio State, Riley Leonard going to Notre Dame. But you think about the names that we will discuss and the names that we don't even mention. And Ari gets into the Big 12. We don't even talk about an Avery Johnson who had Heisman hype last preseason. So while there are unknowns, and when you look at the win totals out there at DraftKings, and they have all the Power Four teams up, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Oregon, and Penn State are the only teams with double-digit win totals currently. Three of them have unknowns at the quarterback position: C.J. Carr, Notre Dame; Dante Moore, Oregon; and Julian Sain, Ohio State. So a lot of these big-time teams, whether it be Alabama going to Ty Simpson or Georgia going to Gunnar Stockton full-time, even though he saw glimpses last year and wasn't all that impressive, certainly in the Sugar Bowl against Notre Dame, or you look at Austin Simmons down at Ole Miss replacing Jackson Dart, it doesn't seem like there's a ton of juiciness to the quarterback position, but as Ari will point out, there's the potential to be a ton of quarterback talent in 2025.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I wrote a column for On3 two days ago with the headline, "Will 2025 be the year of the quarterback in college football?" And it's funny because the person who ended up winning the Heisman last year was maybe one of the best college football players of the last decade plus. But also, too, was he the biggest star in college football? I don't even know if he was the biggest star of his own town or his own team because of Deion Sanders and Shedeur. And you have that all, out there. and you didn't have a star quarterback. There was no Caleb Williams or Trevor Lawrence or Tim Tebow or transcendent, but trying to pick which one it's going to be this year is impossible. I mean, if you go down and look at the list here, like you have the favorites to be the face of the sport, which are Arch Manning at Texas, Cade Klubnick at Clemson, Drew Aller at Penn State, and Garrett Nussmeier at LSU. But you have young guns like Lenore Sellers at South Carolina and DJ Lagway at Florida. Then the intriguing transfer list, which is John Mateer, Nico Iamaliava, who's at a new place, and who knows what that's going to look like. I mean, he's an intriguing guy. Devin Dampier at Utah was a really, really awesome quarterback to watch in New Mexico. I don't know how many of your viewers spent time watching him play last year, but he's an absolute maniac at the position. Jackson Arnold's going to Auburn. Darian Mensah at Duke.
Yeah.
Carson Beck, what's that going to be at Miami? Caden Salter at Colorado, Julian Sand at Ohio State for some of the unknowns, Dante Moore, CJ Carr, like you mentioned, Bryce Underwood at Michigan. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot of quarterbacks out there, and then there's underrated ones. Sam Levitt, Luke Altmaier, Sawyer Robertson, Kevin Jennings, Jake Retzlaff. Like, there's a lot of quarterback talent. And even if you look at, like, smaller conferences that don't necessarily take much of the attention, like in the Big 12, like, there are only two or three teams in the Big 12 this year that – don't have a quarterback that's a known commodity. So trying to pick which one of those is going to go into the abyss and come out a star is really, really difficult, especially because a lot of that is predicated on how good their teams are going to be. And you have a lot of teams in the SEC specifically who could go one of two ways this year. Oklahoma comes to mind, Florida comes to mind, Auburn comes to mind. You have these teams can be really good or really bad again. And depending on why they're really good, if it happens, is a really intriguing thing to me. It's like, I know that Arch Manning's Heisman numbers are rightfully juiced to pretty low. I feel like 8-1 or whatever he's getting right now, 10-1 seems like a pretty solid bet because he's Arch Manning. His name does carry a lot of weight. A lot of the Heisman Trophy is celebrity and name recognition and all that stuff. And a lot of these quarterbacks who have come out of nowhere to win it in the past hadn't had that going in. He already has it. And I feel like it's a relative impossibility that he's not going to put up big numbers for a team that wins a lot of games. So you combine that whole thing, that would probably be my favorite. But like when you're trying to pick which quarterback out of all those I just listed, they all could be there and they all could win it. And then of course, that doesn't even come into play how many years the person who ended up winning, like how many people do you think knew who Ashton Gentry was last May?
Right. Yeah.
Like, I mean, he became the number one thing in college football last year because he was awesome. We knew he was awesome last year because we cover the sport, but like, I don't think the general fan knew who he was last year. Who are the 10 players that are going to come out of nowhere and rock the sport because we don't even know who they are? I feel like Heisman voting, or I mean, Heisman betting is really, really difficult. Even though Heisman voting is very predictable, the problem with Heisman Trophy is who's popular in November often is different than who's popular in September and October too. So I think that Heisman voters lack imagination and they typically just vote for the team, the quarterback on the best team that has the best stats, and there's not much to it. But trying to figure out which quarterback's going to lead the way is an increasingly difficult task this year. And I think that the sport will be better as a result of it. It's going to be more entertaining and every conference is going to have their stars. And, you know, it's intriguing to see young players step in and returning player, but like Cade Klubnik's going to be, we know, but we just don't know who's going to be that guy.
Yeah. It's funny. I did a podcast last summer, just deep diving kind of betting on the Heisman. And really there's not a ton of value betting it now, unless you have a Travis Hunter situation. Right. So that is certainly one.
Once in a lifetime, by the way.
Yeah. I mean,
first of all, it's a once in a lifetime player who also existed at a time where there was no marquee quarterback out there. I mean, Cam Ward was almost that, but they blew it at the end of the year. And he was playing for a coach whose voice comes through in a megaphone every time he speaks. Like that isn't something that you can – like, I feel stupid for not betting it last summer because we knew he was really good and we knew Colorado – but I thought Colorado was going to stink this year. So, like, they ended up being pretty good, but he ended up winning it even though he missed a bunch of games too, which is insane.
Yeah, no, and you know, it's funny because I went to Boise UNLV here in Vegas on a Friday in October, and I did a segment on my show this Saturday morning after saying Ashton Gentry's not winning the Heisman. He needed to go for 200 yards in this game, and he ends up runner-up, only, you know, a couple votes shy of winning the Heisman Trophy. But you mentioned Cam Ward, and you and Andy had a really fascinating conversation earlier this week on your podcast, and I want to bring it to light here. Talking about Miami, and they were one of the more busy teams in the portal in the spring semester. You know, they're always going to be busy in the portal. And, you know, sometimes as you look around, Ari, it's a situation where do you want your team to be as busy as they were in the spring? So let's start with Miami before looking ahead to week one against Notre Dame. What are you expecting from this Miami team, you know, this upcoming season? Because, look, last year had its ups and certainly had its downs. And most notably, you know, you're in the playoff if you don't lose to Syracuse. But they lost to Syracuse, you know, at the Carrier Dome or whatever they're calling it nowadays. 9.5 is their win total. They don't play Clemson in the regular season. They do play Louisville. They do play SMU. They play Notre Dame. They play Florida in the non-con. So what do you make of this Miami team? And did you like the haul that they brought in during the spring portal?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're the portal strategy is so interesting because you have some teams, another pretty big team in that state, Florida State, who is like all portal or has been in the past all portal. And you've seen the highs of how that can pay off and the lows of what happens when you lose those players. And you have teams that don't do very much portaling, which like Clemson would lead the way there. And they've been down in their own right as a result of it, right? Because, you know, they've been very good and have won the ACC, but they haven't been what they were in the 2017, 18, 19, 20 runs. And then you have the teams that supplement, which I think is the best way to do it. I think Miami has struck a balance of that. They have done a very good job of recruiting high school players under Mario Cristobal, and then they've enhanced their roster with important luxury piece items, some of it at positions of need and some that they don't necessarily need but would be great for depth. And they all were accomplished players for the most part, looking to expand their roles in a team that needs them. Now, the thing that I always say about Miami is, or not, have been all offseason, is I'm not a huge Carson Beck tea drinker. I think there's a lot of people out there who believe he's one of the top five quarterbacks in the sport. You look at the list of names that I just, you know, rattled off to you 5 minutes ago. I'm not sure I see him in those lenses, even though he's on that list. And like Cam Ward was sensational. I think it's possible that we look back at you know, him in 4 years ago, holy crap, that's one of the best quarterbacks college has seen. We didn't appreciate it because their defense stunk. It's kind of what happened with Jaden Daniels, right? Like Jaden Daniels, you know, played on a team that had an awful defense, put up a bunch of numbers, won the Heisman, and then like, you know, now is maybe the best young quarterback in the entire sport, in the NFL. I think Cam Ward could be in that, and they're replacing that guy. They're also right. Xavier Restrepo, who was the most, was the all-time yardage receiver in Miami history. Great receiver. He ran slow 40, so he fell out of the draft, which is crazy. If anybody just watched his tape, they would know he's going to be awesome. And Jacoby George and, you know, Damian Martinez, they've lost a lot of firepower on their offensive skill side. So I think that Miami has done a very good job of, you know, adding pieces at places of need. I think their lines are going to be good with Mario Cristobal's background of being a line coach and from there. And, you know, I don't know that I'm really high on the notion that they're going to go out and win 11 games this year. But I anticipate that they'll probably wind up somewhere around the number, you know, 8-4, 9-3, if I had to guess. They have four really, really difficult games. And if they can avoid losing games they shouldn't, which they were unable to do last year, and split the four big games, then they get to your 10. But I think that, you know, you still kind of have to see that. So I think that I like them right around the number. And I don't know how strongly I feel either way about over under on that.
So looking at week one, and we're so far away, but I had a little fun this week looking at week one, and kudos to a lot of these teams. You know, I know Notre Dame and Miami, it's the ACC agreement, but we've got LSU at Clemson, Alabama at Florida State, Texas at Ohio State. Not a lot of neutral site games. There's a couple. South Carolina, Virginia Tech, they play in Atlanta. But Sunday night of Labor Day weekend, which has really become kind of a primo spot in the college football landscape, at Miami, it's going to be Notre Dame and the Canes. And look, the last time Notre Dame was in the Orange Bowl or in that stadium, they, you know, won in a crazy game I was at against Penn State, but the last time they went down to South Beach and played the Canes, they got their absolute ass kicked in a game where I believe they had one loss going into that one. Mike Elko, you know, the offensive defensive coordinator for that game. So the point spread's 2.5. Like, I'm not asking for you to make a emphatic statement one way or the other, but it is kind of an intriguing game in this regard. You know, Miami loses the number one overall pick. And Notre Dame's losses from a draft standpoint, Ari, aren't eye-popping, right? Xavier Watts was a third-round pick. Benjamin Morrison was their highest draft pick. He wasn't even playing late in the season last year. Riley Leonard was a sixth-round pick. But you know, from everything that you read, there's a lot of firepower for the Irish, but there's also some questions when you look at CJ Carr at the quarterback position, losing the veteran leadership in the secondary and the linebacking core. So I guess this is more of a question of looking at these two teams and where you are on their projection in 25.
Well, I think that they're both going into critical years. You know, obviously Notre Dame kind of broke through a year ago and proved that they could do something that people have been doubting they'd be able to do for 20 years. I think part of that, you know, was the flattening of the sport in the sense that there weren't a lot of super teams. And I thought, you know, when they actually played one in the national championship game, they showed why they were really good. I don't think that we, even as they were going into the playoff and traversing it, that they got enough credit. And hopefully even in a loss, people saw like, holy crap, that team was legit. And I think that a lot of the elements that made that team so good are back. Namely, the offensive line is going to be maybe the best offensive line in college football. I think Jaden Gatehouse is going to be awesome. He could be a receiver that, you know, take the top off of a defense. And that's something that even Notre Dame didn't have at a bunch of, I mean, you know, Jaden showed out in the playoff, but yep. You didn't know that you loved Notre Dame's receivers all year. They've got one of the best running backs, if not the best running back in college football. And I think they're going to play fundamentally sound, tough, and efficient defense. So like to me, I look at Miami and I see all the things that they've put together and I understand why they're a dog. I don't know. It's, what'd you say? 7.5, right?
2.5.
Oh, I thought I saw, really? Cause I saw somebody, I looked this up the other day cause my buddy's a Miami fan and I saw all the futures. Maybe it's moved, but did it open at 7.5? Cause I saw 7.5 everywhere.
Yeah. So, I have DraftKings up right now and they're at 2.5.
Okay. Yeah. 7.5 seemed like a huge number to me.
That would be too big. That would certainly be too big.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm going to send you the screenshot. So you tell me. I literally just did this 2 days ago.
I heard you say it on your podcast and I'm like, well, I'm having Ari on tomorrow. So I won't text him right now.
You make the mistake. So here's the Notre Dame at Miami odds. Bet 365. They're all 7.5. MGM, all right. DraftKings. I took this screen. Maybe it's just not updated or it was wrong, but all the major books have it here at 7.5. So I'm going to send you this so you don't think I'm an idiot. But yeah, because I was like, I'm going to take Miami at that.
If that's 7.5, you got to take Miami. No, 2.5 is the number. Yeah.
I think I like Notre Dame and where they are as a team better. I think that their floor is much higher. I think if Carson Beck hits is healthy. I mean, also too, like you're placing a bet in May or trying to come up with what you think in May. It's kind of hard to do that when you haven't even seen Carson Beck really at full speed at Miami yet. So like both teams, I think, need to have good years. I want to see Notre Dame put together another playoff caliber year. So because that's the thing with Notre Dame, too. It's like they've made the playoff in the past and then kind of returned to being a solid team and not a great team. I think year over year consistency is what helps you recruit and continue to build teams like that. But now that, you know, they just had an unfortunate reality, which is the same thing that happened to Oregon last year, too. If you look at who was drafted off that Ohio State team, Ohio State last year was the last, potentially last super team that you're going to see in this era of college football now with the NIL and all like the amount of players they had both incoming and returning that could have been in the NFL. They just were going to beat anybody they played. And I feel like they had a really valiant effort. And I feel like you learned a lot about Marcus Freeman, who, by the way, was on the hot seat in some Notre Dame's friends' minds after they lost to NIU earlier in the year. Like, that can't happen again. And I don't know why it's happened multiple times. But if he definitely cemented himself as one of the best young coaches in the sport. So, again, I like where Notre Dame is a little bit more. I think I like the fact, too, that they figured out who their quarterback was really early on and went with it and then didn't play this, like, grab-ass, like, who's going to be the starting quarterback up until the final week of fall camp. Like, the person who won the job won the job. They did it, so they have the entire summer to kind of exist in that role, and they can build their team around it. And I'm excited to see what CJ Carr can do in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you go deep cut, there's some – I don't think they believe Kenny Minchie can win the job, but certainly he's there. I think there might be a package for him, but I would agree.
Steve Angeli's at Syracuse because CJ Carr won the job.
Yeah. Like, and the more you peel back the onion, I'm sure you guys have discussed this, CJ Carr kind of came in as a slight favorite and continue to exceed those odds. Look, I am on record saying that I thought Steve Angeli would start at Miami. And obviously that is inaccurate. I mean, I guess technically, could he start a game at Miami? I don't know if Syracuse plays at Miami this year, but
I don't want to neg Steve Angeli, but like, I think that everybody overreacted way too much to the drive he had against Penn State. And I know that he sustained them, and I get that, like, Did we forget that he basically turned it over and got lucky? Like, I mean, like, they make it seem like he was out there slinging it like he was Joe Montana in his prime. Like, he had an efficient drive that ended in three, and of course they were getting their butts kicked for two quarters. And I understand that they lost some players. Didn't Rocco Spindler also go down on the same? Like, I know it was a tough situation. I'm not saying it wasn't impressive, but to like go into the offseason trying to pretend like this guy is something that he's not or hasn't been, I thought was a little bit disingenuous. I knew CJ Carr was going to win that job. And like also, too, in college football, a lot of times when you're trying to figure out what's going to happen, just follow what the coach has done. They built the team around a quarterback that they got out of high school ranks. They didn't go into the portal to get somebody else. And it kind of made you know and feel that they knew who their quarterback was going to be next year. And I'm not trying to give you shit here, man. Like, I just
– No.
He just wasn't – Steve Angeli wasn't the guy.
And I said it on Pete Sampson and Matt Fortuna's podcast. I go, look, he did a good job, but if Abdul Carter's got two functioning arms, he recovers that fumble, and it's a completely different thought process for that Orange Bowl. But I am thankful that Abdul Carter only had one functioning arm in that Orange Bowl.
Too, that like if he would have fumbled and turned the ball over, like Notre Dame probably would have lost the game. And then like, so like, I understand the value of his drive, and I'm not trying to diminish what he meant to that team and what he did there. He might have saved the game for them, but I'm saying that being impressive in him parlaying that into being the quarterback of the future aren't two things that both have to exist. It can be impressive, but also like not an indication of what Notre Dame's going to do in the future, which is how I felt in the moment.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the Orange Bowl, not because I was there and enjoyed every second of it, but because Penn State on the flip side is got a lot of expectations coming into this year. And look, the Drew Aller interception was a terrible throw. You can make arguments that they shouldn't have been as aggressive, whatever you want to say. But the fact of the matter is the roster retention outside of losing Abdul Carter was phenomenal for Penn State. And this is one of the betting favorites to win the national championship. And I think you've discussed this, and I'm sure your listeners have gotten on you about James Franklin and the inability to win the big game. And, you know, look, this is a team that rightfully so is right now at DraftKings the fifth shortest odds to win the national championship. They're one of just four teams with a win total of 10.5. So are you drinking some Happy Valley Kool-Aid this year?
Do you have the odds for national championship up?
I do.
Chance? Yeah. Where's Clemson in that?
Clemson is 20-1 at DraftKings.
And where does that rank?
Eighth. Tied with LSU.
God, I smash that.
Yeah. I am all in on Clemson this year too. I really like this
20
team.
20-1 odds. Like if you have eight, like I don't think they're the eighth. I think that Clemson's more likely to win the national title just based on they're going to walk into the playoff. Like I don't even know if it's guaranteed that Penn State would make it because of who's on their schedule and in their conference. But Penn State to me is a team that I think you could consider ranking number one in the country right now. If you look at what they return, they've got the best running back duo in the country. I know Jeremiah Love is a star. We just got done going over that. But their lines are going to be very good. And they have a quarterback who might be a top five pick. The Denai Dennis Sutton's one of the best edge rushers in college football. I don't need to go down their whole roster with you, but like it is impressive to me that they were able to upgrade at their most overt weakness, which is that wide receiver. They had two portal additions going into the spring, and they backdoored their way into Trevor Peña from Syracuse, who was one of the leading receivers. I think they were leading receiver in the ACC last year, and that's the one thing that Penn State has kind of lacked. You know what's insane to me? And you were at the Orange Bowl. I know you're a Notre Dame guy. Penn State did not have a receiver catch a pass in that entire game. Like, can you imagine? And they almost won. Yeah. Like they were a really good team last year. And I think that the unfortunate reality for James Franklin has been that he is compared constantly head to head to Ohio State. And obviously Penn State pays him and wants to win that game. But like judging James Franklin through the lens of Ohio State's not a fair rubric. Like it's not. And I know that he's lost top five games repeatedly and all those things, and people want to be like, well, if it happened all the time in the past, then it's 100% what's going to happen in the future. But that's not the way that the world works. Nothing happens for the first time until it does. And we're not grading and talking in the offseason about, a coach and what he's done, what you do is you look at the roster and you pick where what you like about it, and then you hope the narrative kind of works its way out. That's why I had Texas going to the playoff 2 years ago, and why I had Notre Dame going to the playoff this year, and Miami I had as a top 10 team going into last year, because look at their players, dude. It's not that hard. Like, people try to make it like into like some narrative discussion of like, oh, you know, Steve Sarkisian never won 10 games in his entire career 2 years ago. Now they've been to the playoff and on the edge of the title game 2 years in a row. Is it because Steve Sarkisian like was reborn into college football, or is it because his fucking team got better? Like, it's not that difficult. Like, no, like Penn State's team, they lost Tyler Warren. Okay. Like, that's a pretty big loss, and he's going to be awesome in the league. But Penn State has the best, most rounded team that they've had at Penn, you know, there maybe ever since at least James Franklin took over. So, you know, I'm not ranking James Franklin. I'm ranking the team he assembled, and the team he assembled is really good. And one last point about that. 4 years ago and 5 years ago, there were teams like Ohio State and Georgia and Alabama and even Clemson at times that stacked talent so firmly in their favor that their second stringers and their third stringers at times were better than the starters of their opponents. And in today's modern college football, you don't have the 51st best player on Alabama's roster being the starter at another Power 5 school. That's not the way it works anymore. So instead of looking at the talent composites, which show you exactly what the talent looks like on the rosters from 1 to 85, I mean, you really only have to go down to 30 now, because the players who are impacting the game are the players that, you know, are impacting the game. And depth does come into play with injuries and stuff, but for the most part, like, Penn State's 1 through 30 is as good, if not better, than everybody else's in college football this year. And, you know, you can take all your James Franklin jokes and throw them in my face if you want, and maybe they'll choke again. I don't know. But as we're sitting here on May 8th or 9th, whenever this runs, they have one of the better rosters in the sport. So make your jokes, but, you know, you made your jokes about Texas and you made your jokes about Notre Dame last year. You know how much shit I took last year when I put out my postseason bracket prediction and had Notre Dame beating Georgia because of narrative? Like, people have no ability whatsoever to, like, put the past in the past and try to, like, analyze something moving forward. It's always what has happened before is going to happen again over and over and over again. Except that's not how life works, and certainly not the way that college football works.
Well, I got shit on the other side because I picked Georgia to win that game, and all of these people who call me a Notre Dame homer were like, wait, you're just covering your ass. I'm like, no, I actually think Georgia will win this game. And then I was I've never been more happy, Ari, to lose money in my life to watch that game and to watch Jaden Harrison return a kickoff. And
People assume that Georgia would win that game because of what we've been programmed in our brains to understand about college football, which is Georgia has bigger, stronger, faster, and more better players than the other team. But if you actually peeled back the curtain and looked at what Georgia was putting on the field last year, although they had a very good defense, Notre Dame had a better overall team than them. And I think that showed in that game. And it was hard to wrap your mind around, and you probably had a hard time as a Notre Dame guy even believing it, because you are conditioned to.
I am.
Every single time we are in this position, we get embarrassed. But that wasn't the team. That wasn't who they were. And in fact, you know, Ohio State was up and above the best team in terms of talent in the country last year, and it wasn't even close. And then the NFL draft confirmed that. But Notre Dame played Ohio State just as tough and just as efficiently as Texas, which is probably the second most talented team in the sport. So, like, you got to look at that stuff, man. You can't get caught up. And we've done two, I don't know when this is running, Tim, but we had two gambling experts on our show the last few days. Tyler Shoemaker, who's a contributor to
my guy.
And then we also had Colin from the Action Network.
Yeah, Colin Wilson. Sure.
Yeah, Colin Wilson. He's sharp too, man.
Love Colin.
But we were talking about gambling. And the way that these books make all their money is because people cannot get out of their own bias when placing bets. They think something is going to happen because of a, you know, previous trend or what they've seen on TV in the past, or every time Georgia plays them, they beat the crap out. Like, none of that stuff matters, man. None of it. What matters is who is lining up and how is that game going to go today. What happened in 2019 does not pertain to what's happening now. And I think that in media, especially, people have no ability whatsoever to evolve their thinking. It's always what happened before is going to happen again. And it drives me crazy. I don't know if you noticed. It drives me freaking insane because we're trying to analyze the future. We're not trying to relitigate the past.
Well, and I mean, look, My listeners know how I like to bet. You know, it's a lot of playing off of what just happened and doing the opposite, and people not understand why is the point spread this short or this big. And yeah, there is certainly value to be had there. All right, Ari, I know you've been busy all day, so I want to let you run on this because I want to talk Clemson. And you mentioned them already. The odds at 20-1 to win the title. I like Cade Klubnik to. You know, have a really good year. You know, it's funny because you just kind of gave this dissertation on getting rid of the past. Well, there were a lot of obituaries being written for Dabo. He's not in the 21st century. And some of it was accurate, but they still made the playoff last year. And you look at this roster and you look around the ACC and I'm like, I don't know, man. This team looks pretty primed and ready to go for a pretty good run in 25.
Yeah, I mean, I like the 20-1 number there, and I have a ticket for it already. Pretty big ticket, actually, because I think that it's a relative lock that they're going to be in the playoff. Like, if you actually look at their schedule, they've got a very favorable schedule. And I just think that they're going to make it. And I understand that they play two important big non-conference games, which is LSU to begin the season. Then, of course, you have South Carolina at the end of the year. But I do think that there's a chance that a three-loss team will get in this year. Not saying it'll be them, but I think we thought that only two-loss teams or better can get in, but last year was weird. I think we're going to find a three-loss team in the playoff this year. But I just they're better than everybody in their conference. They're going to be double-digit favorites in, you know, 80% of their ACC games this year. So I think they're going to get to the stage, and I like having 20-1 tickets when you're three or four games away. Also, too, the things that people were writing the obituaries over, by the way, pretty big author of those obituaries. Well, by the way, they can go out and win the national title. I wasn't wrong. Like, I was writing the obituaries 3 years ago, and I was like, if he doesn't get with it, they're going to be way worse than they've been, and they have been. But, like, also, too, the fact that they're eighth on your list there at DraftKings of most likely to win the national championship, they are one of the few teams that has a proven entity, a quarterback who played his best football at the end of last year. Their receivers are really, really explosive, young and talented, which is something they have lacked in the past. They actually got into the portal this year. They will have the best defensive line in college football, which is the position you probably want the best group at. One of those players is a transfer from Purdue named Will Helt, who might turn out to be one of the best edge rushers in the sport. And they don't play any teams that, you know, I mean, we're going to find out a lot about Clemson in week one, you know, when they play LSU, because LSU is another interesting team that needs to perform this year. But when you look at their roster from top to bottom, Sammy Brown, a linebacker, again, don't want to name the whole roster for you, but holy crap, they've got a lot of good players. I like them. I like them a lot. And I actually think, too, when you look around the sport, you know, talking to a Notre Dame guy, there's no Ohio State boogeyman this year. I don't even think Ohio State's the boogeyman. There's no team out there that I think is loaded that cannot be beaten, which is why Penn State belongs maybe in the top four. Maybe why Notre Dame you'll find in the top five or six, because there are no Alabama's roster is loaded, but we don't know who's going to play their quarterback. Georgia, mm-hmm. Who are their offensive explosive weapons? Who do they go get that's going to fix their problem from last year? The big bad wolves from the past aren't as big and bad anymore. So the teams that have experience, been developed, have addressed areas of concern through the portal. You know, he went out and got one of the best, Dabo did, defensive coordinators he could have gotten, Tom Allen. Like, there is a lot to like about this Clemson team. And sitting at 20-1 here in May, looking at that schedule, I mean, it's terrible. I mean, can I pull it up? Let's pull it up. And I don't want to accidentally exit the podcast studio again.
Here, I'll do it. I'll do it for you.
Here it is.
You've got Clemson. You've got LSU to start, and then you've got Troy at Georgia Tech, Syracuse at Bill Belichick, at Boston College, home to SMU, Duke, Florida State, Louisville on the road, which could be weird. And I think that's a Friday night.
It is a Friday night, November 14th.
And then Furman and South Carolina. So I wouldn't say the easiest cakewalk thing ever. No. But, you know, the Louisville game could be interesting for sure. There's no Miami.
Last year, Louisville might be much better. Louisville kicked their ass. But I feel like if they beat LSU coming out of the gate and they're sitting at, you know, 6-0 hosting SMU, like that SMU-Duke-Florida State threesome could be challenging because we don't know what Florida State's going to be, although I think they're probably a 5 or 6 win team at best this year. Duke has Darian Metz at quarterback. They invested a little bit into their team. They should be better. And SMU, you know, made the playoff last year. But I do think that their schedule is traversable enough where they might slip up at a place or two, but at the same time has enough proven equity to like bolster their resume to get into the playoff. And like they're like plus 140 to win their conference this year. Colin Wilson just said on our other show that he thinks they should be minus 130. So, you know, 20-1 from a team that's probably going to win the ACC seems pretty good. And by the way, they could lose both of their non-con games and still go to the playoff.
Sure.
Like, you know, it's not the same math as it used to be. It used to be like you can't lose twice. It's like, well, now you could lose twice and it doesn't even impact you from being a top three seed with a bye week. Like, you know, it doesn't matter. So, you know, I'm very excited to see because I'm on high alert for potentially good LSU here too. But I think Clemson's going to be really good this year. That's a long-winded answer.
All right, I'll wrap on this because I was trying to figure out the meaning of this tweet, but I had to bring it up because it was one of probably the hardest I've ever laughed in my life watching Home Alone 2 with my brother and watching Harry get electrocuted and then his pitch went to the all-time like level high. So that was your tweet regarding the Notre Dame-Clemson announcement that they'll be playing 12 consecutive years starting in 27. So what was your meaning behind the great gif?
It's just electric. That, by the way, is one of the greatest individual shots in the history of American cinema. I don't know if it gets its credit, but it's an electric agreement. And listen, you know, I almost did the Jesse Pinkman. They can't keep getting away with this because Notre Dame like literally never has to join a conference, although people can't stand it. We get good football in a non-conference scenario for a long period of time. And you also have the potential of a new emerging rivalry in the sport, which is always good. Because whenever you play a team every year, that's how it happens, right? Like you want the familiarity, you want that. And we're getting it. So also, too, very juicy because it goes past the current ACC grant of rights. So I'm very curious. So everyone's like, you think Notre Dame is going to join the ACC? And I'm like, no, I don't. But I think that they did a good job with some more schedule equity moving forward. I'm excited to watch it.
Ari, you had a busy day, man. I appreciate you jumping on.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you.
Thanks again to Ari Wasserman. Really good stuff. Really appreciate him jumping on. Reminder, his podcast is called Andy and Ari. You can get it wherever you get your podcasts. They live stream it over at On3 Sports as well. And you can follow Ari on Twitter. It's his name, Ari, Ari Wasserman. And he covers college football for On3 Sports. So fun conversation. Hope you enjoyed that. He's big on the old Clemson Tigers. And I might dabble. There was, and he mentioned Colin Wilson, who I love Colin. I've had him on the podcast many a times before. His true number is Clemson to win the ACC at minus 130. Plus 170 right now at DraftKings for Clemson to win the ACC. And I'll say this, another college football mind that I really respect, and it's not Colin Wilson, texted me and said that one of his few bets that he has in pocket already, and it's not Brad Powers either, is Clemson to win the ACC. So take that for what you will. I have not added it yet, but I certainly think that it could be a very big year for the Clemson Tigers. All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. I do have some thoughts on a concert that unfolded at Lane Stadium earlier this week, and win totals all out. We'll run through a couple of the notable things from those win totals and a Vegas contest that I think many of you will be excited about. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. We're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm Tim Murray with you. You can always tweet me at @1TimMurray. By the way, if there is a guest that you would like to hear from, that's what the summer months are for. Once we get into the fall, we've got our rotation. We've got our normal early week pod with Adam Burke. We got Matt Eumanns on Thursdays. We'll hopefully catch up with Matt at some point here in the early part of the summer. And I thought Wednesdays with Wes Reynolds were a big success. So once we get into the season, we kind of have our normal rotation. But if there is someone that you'd like to hear from, really respect, maybe we haven't had them on the podcast in the past, please let me know and I'll do my best to oblige. You could tweet me at @1TimMurray. All right, just a couple of things before we get out of here. And I do want to pass this along. And many of you may have heard, but many of you may not have heard, that we've got a college football contest in town this fall, and I'm very excited for it. It is going to be over at the Westgate Superbook. Now, when I first moved to town back in 2020, William Hill had a college football contest. I was a part of that for 2 years. And the Golden Nugget, which me and Jared Smith were fortunate enough to finish top 10 in 2023, we missed the deadline last year. So that was on me. But they do incorporate college football. But I was texting with John Murray over at the Westgate Superbook to get a little bit of the details. And here is what he told me. He said it's a $500 buy-in, so a little bit cheaper than Circa Millions, Super Contest. Those are at $1,000. Nugget is $1,000 as well. And this is what he told me. $500 buy-in, 7 picks a week, starting in August, max of 10 entries. There still are some details to be figuring out. They haven't decided if it's going to be just Power 4 versus Power 4, all games. So there's still some details. Signups will start on July 1st. July 1st is when you can sign up. And then I wanted to clarify something, because the Golden Nugget, their contest starts the first week of the NFL season. So it's week 2 of college football. William Hill, when I was a part of it a couple of years ago, started week 2. But I wanted to clarify with John, is this starting week 1? And he said, yes, because in his eyes, they were too good to pass up. The games in week 1, you've got Notre Dame, Miami, you've got Auburn, Baylor on that Friday night. You've got Alabama, Florida State. You've got Texas, Ohio State. You've got Clemson taking on LSU. So the folks over at the Westgate Superbook felt like it was too good to pass up that week 1. So week 1 will be involved. So there you go. College football contest coming to town. $500 entry, and you can have a max of 10 entries. I certainly will be a part of it, and I have to decide how many entries I want to have. But college football contest, excited to have one back in town. I imagine many of you are excited as well. All right, a couple of things before we get out of here. Metallica played Lane Stadium earlier this week. I am not a big music guy, but I should have asked Ari this, but he was on a bit of a time crunch, so maybe I'll text him about it. And, you know, we're more of a gambling, podcast, hence the name, the College Football Betting Podcast. But I did want to just bring up all of the electric entries that are out there in college football. I don't know if Virginia Tech is one. I haven't been to Lane Stadium to take it in person. It certainly doesn't have the same pop if it's a day game versus a night game. But I was curious about the Metallica Enter Sandman entry and how that's led to from an ATS standpoint. So I reached out to Evan Abrams over at Action Network, because he's got, you know, a database to go back instead of me manually doing it, because I guess I was a little bit lazy. But the last 20 years, games starting after 7 p.m., Virginia Tech is only 19-16 against the spread. So it's not like it's been this enormous home field advantage. Now, it is worth noting, since 2020, they're 9-3 ATS in night games. In the last two seasons, they're 5-0 ATS in night games. Looking back at some of the big games they've had, because, you know, a lot of us think back to the late 90s, early 2000s, the end of the Big East, early ACC years, and those Thursday night games. They had some big wins on those Thursday nights. But I was looking back over my notes. The last time they beat a top 10 team at Lane Stadium, it was a night game, even though it didn't fit the characteristics of Evan Abrams' database, because it started at 6 p.m. Eastern. But I remember talking about this game, I think on primetime. And it was the 2021 season opener. It was a Friday night. Virginia Tech was playing North Carolina, and North Carolina was coming off of an Orange Bowl appearance. Sam Howell was their quarterback, but they had lost a ton of talent at the wide receiver and running back room. And there was just this blind expectation that UNC was going to roll into the season. And they were laying 6 in that game. And Virginia Tech led at the half, I think 10-0, won the game 17-10. So that was the last time Virginia Tech beat a top 10 team at home. That's not that long ago, right? 2021. How about the fact that prior to that, You have to go back over a decade for Virginia Tech to win a game over a top 10 team at home. And it was actually a day game. It was a 3:30 kick against number 9 Miami in 2009. They won that game 31-7. You remember in, what was it, 2015, the year after Ohio State lost at home to Virginia Tech, they went to Blacksburg and they won the game going away. So believe it or not, you know, Virginia Tech at home at night, successful, but not blindly bet them with everything you've got. Even though, if you haven't seen it, go watch Metallica and their performance that they had at Lane Stadium. It was absolutely electric down there at Lane Stadium. So I had to bring that up. And then lastly, I put this out there. I'm not going to go through all the win totals, but DraftKings does have win totals up for all of the Power Four teams. The four teams with the highest, and I mentioned this already, Oregon, Penn State, Ohio State, and Notre Dame. Those are the only four teams right now with double-digit win totals, 10.5, and they're all juiced to the under, varying juice. Oregon, I guess, technically would be looked at as having the best odds to go 11-0, 11-1 or better. Oregon, who went undefeated last year in the regular season, plus 110 to the over 10.5 wins, minus 130 to the under. Penn State and Ohio State, similar juice, plus 135 to the over, minus 60 to the under. And then Notre Dame, plus 150 to the over, minus 50 to the under. The three teams with the lowest win totals, Purdue has the lowest win total of any Power Four team. Barry Odom comes in to a roster that was no doubt the worst in Power Four football, and even some of the good pieces transferred out. You heard Ari talk about one of them going to Clemson. Their tight end went to Ohio State. He was highly sought after. So we'll see what Barry Odom can do. 2.5 wins over under for Purdue, minus 180 to the over. And then the other three Power Four teams with win totals under four, Stanford, which looks like could be an absolute utter disaster of a season. And they start the year week zero out on the island against my guy, Timmy Chang. 3.5, minus 105 to the over. Northwestern, 3.5, minus 130 to the over. And then Mississippi State, minus 160 to the over. I have all of the Power Four teams on Twitter, at one Tim Murray. You could check it out. You could also just check it out at DraftKings as well, but I put them in alphabetical order if you want to look at it that way. But it'll also be interesting documenting this on May 8th, versus, you know, 2 months from now, 3 months from now, when we're going through all of these win totals and checking in on them. All right, that's going to do it for the podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to Ari Wasserman. Thanks to Ryan Hunter. I gave him a fun job to edit up that interview with a couple of hiccups there. But hopefully you enjoyed that interview. Please rate, review, and subscribe. And just a reminder, folks, we're here to stay for the rest of the summer. Every week, we're going to have a podcast for you in this feed. If you've got some suggestions, some wish list people that you'd want to hear from, shoot me a tweet, and I'll see if I can make it happen at one Tim Murray. But really enjoyed the conversation with Ari Wasserman. Hopefully you enjoyed that as well. We're back later next week to talk more college football. This is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.